Welcome to Reclaiming the Republic. This show is sponsored by ReclaimingTheRepublic.org. I am G.R. Mobley. This is an educational grassroots program focused on uniting and leading in restoring the Republic and placing the federal government back into the scope and framework of the Constitution once again. Well, folks, it is now or never, and I'll just give you a heads up. Have a lot of anxiety with the dogs, had the family over, and they finally pulled up chalks and have left the house. And so, you know, there may be a little bit of barking. Where'd they go? Anyway, so just give you a fair warning. It is now or never, and I can't emphasize this enough. And what I'd like to actually do, because it's kind of a patriotic day, you know, when we start looking at what we can do and how we can begin to act. And let's look back at January 6th as, you know, an action that was kind of failed. And as a matter of fact, had the organizers used the Constitution and stepped up on the First Amendment right of petition for the redress of grievances, I think we would have a completely different lawsuit going on, because we've already got a lawsuit going on. Had they been a part of the constitutional movement instead of the let's just call it the status quo Republican conservative agenda, it would be a completely different dialogue, because America would be demanding compliance. And I honestly believe that the Supreme Court would be behaving a lot differently if America looked and understood the Constitution differently. And as a matter of fact, I believe that, you know, it's just about a paradigm shift, folks. Sometimes you'd be surprised what would happen if all of a sudden we shift our paradigms, as long as we start looking at things in the proper perspective. But when we look at things as a left or right, red or blue, instead of a parchment view, then we have a problem, because we're not aligned on the truth, and we're not aligned on the foundation of our government, which is the Constitution. Conservative values have nothing to do with our Constitution. Our Constitution is the supreme law of the land. These are the powers that are delegated. Anything that is not enumerated in that Constitution, they can't do. It has nothing to do with whether it's conservative, right, wrong, good, or evil. It is the law. And it changes the paradigm. It changes our focus to say, you can't do it. Say that with me. You can't do it. You don't have the power. That's all we have to tell the federal government. They don't have the authority to do this. They may have pulled the wool over our eyes for years and years. It's just a matter of getting the states to say, you know what? You can't tell us what these things are, what you're supposed to be able to do. That's for us to tell you. That's where we need to be. So, looking at what happened on January 6th, 2021, when Ashley Babbitt became a victim, and I'll just say she was a victim of circumstance, because I don't think anybody went to work that day that says, I'm going to kill that first lady that I see coming into the building, or whatever the circumstances were where she died. I don't believe she was going, I'm going to go and get killed today. I do not believe anybody went down this path of actually having this direct conflict interaction that caused death and harm to her or anybody else that day. It was just a high-tension issue, a high-tension situation, because clearly, the people that were out there marching, they didn't know what they were doing, and they didn't know where they should have been standing in regards to their federal government. I mean, had they taken, I can't tell you enough, if they would have taken the First Amendment petition direction, I mean, they would have been chanting outside of Congress, demanding Congress to open their doors. Thou shalt not abridge our right to petition thee. As we speak as if we are the gods, because bottom line, the sovereign should speak the way they should, as if they have the ultimate authority. And when it comes to those civil rights, the Bill of Rights that we have ingrained that are protected, where do they get off being able to deny us those rights? So looking at what happened, it's a tragedy that she and other people were harmed. All of these tragedies are occurring all the time, right? And I tell you this all the time. Let me tell you that there are people, and the reason I'm kind of setting the stage with Ashley Babbitt, is there are people that are actually stepping into harm's way. And so what I want to do is I want to take a minute, or I want to take a segment or so, and get you to look in the mirror. Where do you live, and what kind of conflict are you facing right now when it comes to political ideologies and so forth? Are you living in California? Are you living in Chicago? Are you living in New York? If you're not, and you're listening to this show, and you're in a what I would say a very safe and secure area where you actually have an opportunity to get out and help people understand what's going on. You know, yeah, you got to get out of your shell. You've got to get out of your comfort zone, and you have to basically start talking to people. And I have faith in you. As a matter of fact, I have more than just faith in you. I have faith in the Lord that He will be there to help you. He'll help put the words in your mouth. I mean, you got to do some prep. I mean, just don't go in there completely blind. I remember a young man, thought that he could just rely heavily, fully upon the Lord to deliver a speech he was giving to church. And all of a sudden, he didn't know what to say. And that's because he didn't even do any prep work. And so he felt like the Lord, let him down. And no, he let himself down. And we have to be honest. We can't let ourselves down, folks. We absolutely have to step into the batter's box. If we're going to play ball, we have to step into the batter's box. We actually have to get engaged. And so my question for you is, how hard is it for you if you don't have BLM breathing down your throat, if you don't have people coming to you and threatening you where you're out operating or what have you? You're not having that direct conflict. Now, there are people throughout the red states that are getting some of that, but nothing like they have in Southern California. I was speaking with Doug V. Gibbs, and he was very, very frustrated, and I completely empathize. I sympathize for what he's having to go through. I mean, he's very fed up and frustrated because I, for one, basically abandoned that state because I recognized a long time ago that state was lost. And he's there fighting for, what little he has, right, wrong, or indifferent. He believes that we have to stand and fight. And so to be honest, I just didn't leave because of that. I left because my mother was dying of lung disease. And so my wife and I believed and we knew we were the ones that had the ability in all of the family and the capability, resources. We were in the right spot. I mean, the Lord had blessed us, and we were blessed to be able to do it, so we did it. We moved to be able to take care of my mother. And so it was, I guess the huge blessing and benefit was we got out of California. Now, so I like to tell people I'm a refugee. I like to tell people that we left California because but to be true and to be honest, there was a real family and personal reason why we left. Would we have stayed there? No. We would have found another good reason. There's always another good reason to leave. But the fact is that Douglas V. Gibbs is sticking it out. And Douglas V. Gibbs and a lot of other people that are in California are really, they don't know what to do. And so he is explaining to me, as he was teaching the Constitution out at a kind of like an outdoor plaza kind of shopping area, burger joint place, and using the chairs, and the management does not mind that they're there to do that. Well, BLM shows up, and BLM shuts them down, and they threaten them and so forth. And I'm going, wow. And he doesn't know what to do because he does not want to get into a direct conflict with them and then have legal problems and so forth. And so what do you do? I'm telling you this because do you have it that tough? Folks, our liberty's on the line, and these folks are getting out there and at least having public meetings and teaching the and he was teaching the Constitution. He was having one of his classes. It's not like he was having a big, huge protest or anything else. He's gotten to a point on their radar that says, how far along they are in being successful when they're going after small classes like his. Not that he doesn't have a bigger reach than that, But when you're focused, and there were maybe 20 people there, 20 people in his class. So it wasn't a huge group. So, yeah, it was easy for them to show up in about numbers of, I don't know how many, but enough to basically, you know, could put, and I think rightfully so, try to instill fear to get people to shut down and go away. See, this is what they have been doing, and they've been banking on it because we, you, America, you have been basically cowering. You're not taking a stand, and you're not telling them that they have no right to be discivil. You know, it's one thing to actually try to be rude, but it's another thing to actually just try to actually shut people down. That in itself is taking away your rights. They're breaking the law, and they don't have a right to do that. It's not about, you know, this isn't a country that will versus will. Everybody has their rights. And when somebody has the permission to be there, and then somebody comes along and says, you don't have the permission, or we're not going to let you be here. Now, it's not a good thing to try to go to that restaurant owner or try to go to the property owner and say, hey, would you protect us? Because 9 times out of 10, they're going to cower faster than anybody else will. So what do you do? Well, when we come back from the break, I'll give you some ideas of what we should be doing. And I will tell you how important it is that you start acting now, that you actually start executing a strategy and a plan, because that's all it takes, and you can win. All you have to do is execute. One step in front of the other. We'll be right back after these two promos.
If you run a business or an organization, you already know email is an essential tool for communicating. If you're interested in reducing your overhead and increasing your productivity, I personally recommend you look into AdLocal email marketing services. AdLocal has a special offer for my listeners with email services that start at $10 a month for your first 1,000 addresses. If you want to increase customer retention, grow your market presence, track your statistics, and improve your engagement with your customers with modern, elegant emails that express the personality of your business with emails that integrate with your website, you need to contact AdLocal, and they handle the rest. Take it from me. AdLocal offers the best solutions for all organization sizes, and they lead with their pricing and the 24-hour customer service. Folks, it's time to call AdLocal at 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com.
If you've listened to my show, Reclaiming the Republic, then you should understand that the Constitution is neither a living document nor a noble guide to governance. In accordance to Article 7, the Constitution is a hard, fast contract, and the states are the only stakeholders in this contract. Integral in contract law, the stakeholders or states possess the inherent authority to exercise oversight and enforcement over their contract. This means they can audit the federal government by the contract, and with republic review, they can enforce compliance to their constitution. Any single state can perform the audit, but when states begin to unite in the auditing process, this is what is referred to as republic review. Please read my argument for republic review as well as my description of the Republic Review model on reclaimingtherepublic.org. We even have a graphic flowchart that shows you how Republic Review works. If you want to learn more, contact me on Facebook or send me an email. Thank you.
Friends, if you have any questions or comments, we have our 24-hour comment line at 425-270-5416. Okay, so bottom line, folks, California, New York, Illinois, I mean, all of these dark blue states, they're in peril. They're sinking. And there are folks out there that are absolutely putting themselves in harm's way in trying to actually get this message out. And, you know, it's humbling, and it's, you know, it's, it makes me feel like, you know, proud to know that there's other people out there that are doing this. And it saddens me. It's an almost an indictment to know how many people actually have this message and have this understanding and aren't doing enough. We need to do more. Did I not tell you it's now or never? Did I not tell you? We're so close to that precipice that just with the wrong footing, we'll slip right off. So when we look at, and what does it take? Does it take a few people, a few patriots to die standing up for their freedom? Is that what we're going to need? Do we need to have a Twin Towers effect to where, you know, we actually, you know, get hit in the mouth? Because I'm telling you, Biden's hitting us in the mouth. I mean, and we're not doing hardly anything. We're complaining. We've got, oh, we've got these really cool memes and we've got all these tweets out there. Yeah, you know, we're winning, aren't we? I'm sorry. The fact of the matter is that there is a strategy. There's a strategy that you can execute in building and developing a constitutional county. Every county can be done, especially every red county. It should be a very easy leap for you. As a matter of fact, you know, it's almost like getting up out of bed, that kind of leap. It should be perfunctory. It should be one of those things that doesn't even take, you know, a thought. It should be like, what do they call that? Second nature. There you go. You know, where you just duck. You see something coming, you duck real quick. That's second nature kicking in, right? Survival, just getting up out of bed. We need to be acting. And what I'd like to do is I'd love to see, you know, the red states send some love and some energy out to the blue states by saying, don't worry, we've got you. All the patriots, everybody in the United States deserves to have their rights protected. And we're going to take care of it here because we have the ability to do this. Because we do, folks. In the red states, you have all the ability to actually take a stand to make sure nobody loses their rights. These evil people are just laughing, and they understand what they're doing to you. And they think this is great. And they're, ironically, they don't even understand how they're going to make themselves the victims. When they can finally, unattestedly, execute the plan that they want to execute, I'm telling you, folks, there is going to be death, mayhem, like you won't believe. And it's going to be at biblical proportions. And by the way, go read the Bible, because the Bible tells you that's what's going to happen. It doesn't have to happen in America. We don't have to let it happen here. I mean, there can be plenty of people that will go out and, you know, kill themselves because they do stupid stuff, like these communists in the Bolshevik Revolution. They want to get out there and we have to defend ourselves and shoot them. Then that's what we have to do, folks. We have a right to defend ourselves. We have a right to defend our property. We have a right to defend this nation. And more importantly, we have an obligation. If you don't hear this in my promos, and you don't hear me say this enough, we have an obligation to protect and defend our Constitution. And these people that are trying to actually undermine it and destroy it and get rid of it, they don't belong here and they don't deserve to be along here. As I tell people, do you believe that communists have a right to be American citizens and vote in America? No, they don't. As a matter of fact, that flies in the face of everything the framers did. When the framers were done, I mean, if you look at the difference, just the difference between the British loyalists and the, you know, those people that fought the revolution, and or even the milquetoast people that didn't do anything, but they, you know, they just kind of tried to live their lives and make money. They weren't on the revolutionary side, but they weren't loyalists either. They were indifferent. Most of the people in America at that time were indifferent. But the loyalists, they were identified and they were shipped out. They lost all their property. They had no property rights. When the war was over, they were booted out. And we need to be doing the exact same thing, because they do not have a right to be here. No one has a right to be able to claim themselves as a citizen, be legally and morally obligated to support and defend the Constitution against enemies, foreign and domestic, and then actually attack the Constitution. You just violated that oath, and so you should be denied your citizenship. And you should be escorted to the first garbage scow to haul somewhere around the world to some armpit, right? Cesspool, what have you. And, you know, say good day. Enjoy your stay. And, you know, and we'll be happily on our way. Yeah, you can make it a little Dr. Seuss type of rhyme. Anyway, and I wasn't trying to rhyme, but my point is, folks, these people in California, these people in, you know, these blue states or purple states that are getting out there and trying to do these things, they're putting themselves in harm's way. Can you send them a message? Can you let them know that you don't have that problem and hey, my brother, we've got this. You keep it up. You do what you can. Try to survive. We don't want anybody dying. But if they do, you know, I tell you, I would rather die fighting for my country and your liberties than die just of, you know, natural causes or any other form of death. There's probably no greater and more noble death to die for other than defending your wife, you're defending your family, or defending the liberties of the world. That's what a true hero is. And when we look and, you know, we call people, it just ticks me off that you don a uniform and you're called a hero. And you've heard me do this before, so I'm not going to go down this path. All I wanted to do was I wanted to place a little perspective for you as we kind of gone through Memorial Day and we've kind of gone through this focus on what patriots and these people have made the ultimate sacrifice. We have people today that are stepping in harm's way that are making the ultimate sacrifice. Let's not marginalize the tragedy of Ashley Babbitt's death. But she was a victim of circumstance. I mean, it wasn't like that person was actually going like a BLM to shut her down. At least I would hope that wasn't the case. There's no evidence of that. It's not like some coordinated effort. But I am telling you, the leadership of that movement for that rally in D.C., I think they share some of the blame because they did not attack D.C. with the Constitution. All they did was they threw a lot of bodies out into the street, chanting and marching and not absolutely holding and calling for government to be held accountable in accordance with the Constitution. It's a night and day difference, my friends. And this is why this is what you need to be doing. This is exactly what your government doesn't want you to do. They don't want to be held accountable. They love the fact that they're getting away with murder. They're getting away with tyranny and despotism. And they love it. Suck it up, America, because you're on your last air. That's your last breath you've got there. Come on. Are we going to really let them put us under? Let's use the Constitution the way the good Lord gave it to us to use against them. So we were focused and we were talking about, and we kind of just wrapped up on, out of going through... Because might as well tell you, we're still going through the comprehensive constitutional positions to campaign on for our county, state, and federal elections. Now, remember, this is an execution that you can do right now if you've got a campaign. You want to change your campaign instead of being a campaign of building the wall or making yourself, you know, a little catchy phrase, you know, let's make it real. Let's make it on the Constitution on every facet. Let's not be cherry pickers. Let's not be hypocrites. Let's not say, oh, well, we defend your right to bear arms, but we let everything else go. Are you kidding me? That's hypocrisy. It's the same thing with, you know, we're all for abortion, but we'll let all these other perversions, all these other terrible things and evil things happen. Really? How moral is that? We have to take the stand that all immorality is immoral and wrong. Not just one little thing. I don't care, folks. We cannot give any allowance to any slight degree of evil. We got to stop surrendering ground just so you can hold them in this one spot. We've been surrounded, or I should say, every myopic group out there that is taking a stand on abortion, the Second Amendment, and so forth, every single one of these groups has been surrounded. And I mean that because they've allowed around them all of these other things to slide. If we all unite on the Constitution and take a stand and say, not one thing, you cannot slide on one thing in this Constitution. We're holding you accountable to the entire document. Wow. We get it all back. We get it all back instead of just trying to preserve what little they're leaving us. Do you understand the difference? And I know you do. I'm trying to make an appeal to some of the new listeners that we've been able to enjoy bringing onto the show. But this show is all about academic evidence and academic evidence-based solutions of what we need to be doing. And this show is sponsored by Reclaiming the RepublicReview.org as well as Reclaiming the Republic. Now, I slid by on my obligatory endorsements because I thought this message was that critical. We need to get into the content. We need to wrap this content up. So when we come back, we're going to be diving into, I believe, what's ever after the citizenship. I think it might be equal footing, the equal footing clause. So we'll be right back after these two promos. Thank you so much. Folks, I'm constantly providing you with case after case and giving you both the empirical information as well as irrefutable academic evidence that the federal government is operating well outside the bounds of the Constitution. In measuring outlays, the federal government is spending over 80% of your tax dollars on unconstitutional government. This is why we don't need a balanced budget amendment. We just need to enforce the Constitution. So what is it going to take for you to take a stand in getting the federal government back into the framework of the Constitution? To be clear, the solution is simple and does not require much work on any one individual, especially if everyone contributed to the effort. We only ask that you make a commitment today to contributing however you can and make the difference necessary for our posterity's sake. Send me an email at info@reclaimingtherepublic.org and let me know how you'd like to help so we can help you save our republic. To become a citizen, one must take an oath to support and defend the Constitution. Those of us who are naturally born citizens are obligated and duty-bound to fulfill the same oath even though we're not required to take it because it is implied upon us at birth. This is why I cannot emphasize enough the importance in supporting businesses who are supporting our Constitution. We have to stop supporting businesses that have chosen to hide behind political correctness, and obviously we must stop supporting progressive businesses who are working to undermine our republic and our Constitution. Do not let businesses or organizations convince you that they are supporting the Constitution by supporting protests for social justice. By definition, social justice is the distribution of wealth, opportunities, and privileges within a society. In other words, they're calling for socialism, which is incompatible with individual liberty and individual sovereignty and our Constitution. With that, please consider supporting businesses who advertise on this show and this radio station. Don't forget, you can call our 24-hour comment line to ask a question or to speak on any topic. Dial 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we kind of move forward here, we are talking about the Equal Footing Clause, and or not the clause, but the doctrine, because when they actually created this Constitution, there were so many parties to it. There were 13. Actually, 13 parties over time. I believe originally there were a total of, and I got it right here, here's the statehood order. By the time the Constitution was ratified and they formed their first Congress, New York was the final state that ratified. The last two states out of the 13 that did not participate in the very first year's session was North Carolina and Rhode Island. Now, North Carolina had some of the best debates over the Constitution. It's just that they couldn't pull the trigger, and they kind of regretted the fact that they didn't get involved up front because they missed the input on the Bill of Rights. Now, Rhode Island was even a year later. I mean, 6 months later, right? Because they ratified in May of 1790, where it was 1789, November 1789, when North Carolina ratified. Now, technically, the Bill of Rights came out, but they had no input in going into what was going into that amendment or those 12 amendments. So, in other words, they didn't participate in Congress like they could have. So, anyway, as we kind of look at the Constitution, The Constitution kind of lays out how the federal government is their role and responsibility over states and new states. And we'll find in Article 4 of the Constitution, Section 3, right here, this is what it says. New states will be may be admitted by the Congress into this union. So this is what I tell you. Now listen to this, because where does it say that Hong Kong can't be admitted into this union? Where does it say any nation in Europe can't be admitted? There's no way that at that point in time, after they ratified this Constitution, would the framers have even accepted any European nation at that point, because at that point in time, the United States wasn't even established well enough to be able to survive that kind of influence of a large country coming in and becoming a part of the Constitution, then basically wiping us out. So for the first thing they had to do is they had to kind of create this layer of protection. And, you know, it's kind of like planting a sapling. You don't expose the sapling to the harshest edge and the harshest weather, you know, up front. I mean, you can and hope that it survives, but if you really want that sapling to take root and grow, you want to make sure you give it some advantages over those things that could cause it harm and destroy it. And so when we look at this new formed nation of, you know, sovereign states, we had a lot of issues. We still hadn't declared, we weren't fully done with the Revolutionary War. I mean, it was the War of 1812, that second Revolutionary War, that finally ended that. And once we were done with that, we, you know, we had Mexico, we had, you know, the expanse, the manifest debt. There were lots of little things, and many of the things that we were doing, we were misguided on, or I should say, the people that were leading the charge at that point in time. I think that some of the power went to their head. They made mistakes. They did things that the Constitution didn't allow, and it caused problems. And one of those things was the Missouri Compromise. This is why the Enabling Acts are so important. So what are the Enabling Acts? The Enabling Acts are the acts of Congress, where Congress actually declares that they now acknowledge this new state to be formed called Vermont. And on March 4th, 1791, Vermont was admitted into the Union. And in June 1st, 1792, Kentucky was admitted. So these new states started coming into the Union one by one. And each of these states had enabling acts. And in the very beginning of these enabling acts, they basically declared that these states were sovereign in every capacity. They were based on the equal footing. They had the sovereignty and equal footing as all other states in the Union. So let me get back to what the Constitution actually states, because this is what's really important. New states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, but no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of another state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states or parts of states without the consent of the legislatures of the states concerned, as well as of the Congress. So in other words, Congress first off has to agree. Now, what they're talking about in this portion here, because it basically it says right here, but no new state, this is a whole different thought. It says, new states may be admitted by the Congress into this Union, period. Done. Got it? So in other words, any state can come and petition, new states. But no new state shall be formed or erected within the jurisdiction of any other state, nor any state be formed by the jurisdiction of two or more states, or states of or parts of states without the consent of the legislature. So this last portion is basically qualifying that you can't kind of create your own little revolt in your state, like you see in many of the states, the State of Liberty in Washington State, they tried to break off. You can't just, you know, get away with breaking away and saying, you know, to heck with you, you sovereign state that we live in. In other words, they recognize the sovereignty that that state has and the control that that state should have over whether that land goes away from it or not. So regardless of what, and West Virginia was kind of a unique case, but I don't want to get into that. I could spend a lot of time just going over the Enabling Acts and all of the history of the Enabling Acts and so forth. And we kind of do that. But what's really important that you need to understand is that the states themselves, as they came into the Union, they were basically declared sovereign states. In other words, these states were granted equal footing. And as a matter of fact, the language in, because I'll open up the Virginia Enabling Act, and this is what it says. Congress of the United States at the third session begun and held at the city of Philadelphia on Monday, the 6th of December, 1790, an act for the admission of the state of Vermont into this union. The state of Vermont having petitioned the Congress to be admitted. So this is what the state has to do. So Hong Kong, let's put Hong Kong in there. Hong Kong would need to petition Congress to be admitted as a member of the United States. And this is what the Enabling Act then says. Be it enacted by the Senate and the House of Representatives of the United States of America in Congress assembled and hereby enacted and declared that on the 4th day of March, 1791, the said state by the name and style of the state of Vermont shall receive and admitted into this union as a new and entire member of the United States. There it is right there, the entire member. In other words, equal footing. Now, they didn't use the equal footing until I think it came into maybe the Kentucky. I don't want to. They actually started calling it equal footing. And so they basically started helping people understand that there's no difference in sovereignty from one state to another. And that's because where was the power in what I had read? Because it says new states shall be admitted into this Congress, but it doesn't say anywhere the Congress has the power to delineate, or I should say to defray powers, sovereignty, to marginalize, or anything else? Not at all. But it goes on. Article 4, Section 3 also states this. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make all needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or property belonging to the United States. Okay, so let's end that clause right there, ends right there. There's a semicolon. Nowhere does it say anything about a sovereign state. It basically is talking about the territory that the United States is in possession of, or the property belonging to the United States. So in other words, Congress shall have the power to dispose of. Let's say they have some property. They have a building. They don't need it anymore. They should be able to dispose of it. So they should be able to sell it and make money off of it. One of the also things is that when they purchase the territories with the Louisiana Territory, now, how was it that they were going to pay for that? Well, they could, and they did, I believe, lay out a plan so that the states would have to kind of repay them for what they paid. Now, it's not to make money. The federal government was not put in place to make money, but it should have been reimbursed for all of the, you know, whatever it was, 9 cents a square mile or whatever it was. I don't know, a penny. It doesn't matter. It is only reasonable that the states would then come back and say, okay, we're now going to reimburse you now that we've created our own state out of this land that you've purchased for our good being, and then move forward as a complete sovereign state that they're not beholden to the federal government at all. So moving on, nowhere here does it say that they have any power over a sovereign state. I'll read it again. The Congress shall have power to dispose of and make needful rules and regulations respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. Folks, the United States, or I should say, each individual state in this union is not property of the United States. They are parties to the Constitution and parties to the compact. They're integral members, but they are not the property of the federal government. And the federal government believes that they are their property. And that is the big lie. And so with that, we will go into a break, and I'll let you cogitate on this. We have one other little clause to get into. This is why this Enabling Act does take a little bit of time, and we want you to understand this whole process. So when we come back, we'll be diving more into the Enabling Acts and what should happen. We'll be right back after these two promos.
Have you taken the time to watch our presentation on YouTube that provided an irrefutable argument of what we have to do to save our Constitution and our Republic? I know it's over an hour and 30 minutes, but you only need to watch the first 30 minutes. If you take the time to watch this presentation, I promise it will change your paradigm regarding what our Constitution is and what we have to do if we are going to save it, our liberties, our sovereignty, and our Republic. We already have answers to most of the questions that you might think of after watching this presentation, and we want to help you get to a point where you have a profound understanding of the audit and republic review process. This is why our bullet overview and flowchart of both the argument and process is available on reclaimingtherepublic.org. The sooner you get informed, the sooner you can get involved and make an impact. So go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to the Take Action page. That's where you'll find the video. Thank you so much.
To set the record straight, Republic Review is neither an Article 5 convention nor a convention of states. In accordance with Article 5 of the Constitution, this convention requires 2/3 of the states to apply to Congress to convene a convention with the intent to amend the Constitution. This convention is unable to solve our real problem, which is non-compliance to the Constitution, and would be dangerous to convene at this time. In contrast, Republic Review is the process of the states exerting its constitutional authority over the Constitution. An audit does not require an application to Congress. This authority is inherent to principal stakeholders of a contract. Why do we need Republic Review? Because this is the only way the states can deal with the federal encroachments into roles, responsibilities, and powers that belong to the states. To learn more about Republic Review, please go to reclaimingtherepublic.org to read my content and my model on the audit and Republic Review process.
As a reminder, if you have any questions or comments, we have a 24-hour comment line, 425-270-5416. Okay, so as we read the second part of this second paragraph of Section 3, it says, and nothing, so just keep in mind, we already basically laid out that the federal government does not have any control over any states. But what they do have, they have absolutely the power to dispose of needful, all needful rules, regulations, respecting. So again, I'm going to read this. It's very deceptive to some people, but I'm going to highlight the one word. The Congress shall have the power to dispose, get rid of, all needful rules, regulations, respecting the territory or other property belonging to the United States. Now, does it say that they have all the power to create and make all needful rules and regulations? No, it says dispose. The whole point of the states coming into the Union and territories is for the territory to become a productive part of the Union, not to allow the federal government to basically convert itself into territories instead of states, because then it would be the almighty powerful Oz in control of the entire land mass. That they did not have that power. This is why we enumerated the actual land, and that's why we're going through this, because I'm going to show you what land is actually enumerated in, or I should say, property, including real estate as well as buildings. And so whatever it is listed in the Constitution, that is all they can do. Okay? And so here we go. And so as they say here, that they can dispose of anything necessary for the territories to become a state. And so they can dispose of their debt. They have the ability to do all of that. And a part of that would be basically transferring that debt over to the state
so that the state would then have, you know, its full sovereignty, not being held in anything. Now, you'll notice that as they kind of move forward with the Louisiana Territory, they kind of clinged on to some of this stuff. And they said, oh, well, we're gonna grant ourselves parks like the Yellowstone Park. Is that enumerated? No, it's not. And that's why we're going to go through all of this. So we actually cross all the T's and dot the I's here for you, folks. That's why this is academic. These are the academic solutions. And so it goes on, Section 3, the final part of this paragraph states this, and nothing in this Constitution shall be so construed as to prejudice any claims of the United States or any particular state. So in other words, they can't make or construe anything that would basically put a state into a disadvantage that would prejudice them. They can't prejudice themselves. And so this is kind of like this line that says, you know, the federal government cannot do anything that would basically put itself at a disadvantage. Let me give you an example of how it could do that. Let's say the federal government, somebody in the federal government who didn't have the authority to do this, because clearly it's not in the Constitution, but they're off in some secret little office allowing China to buy property. And next thing you know, it just, nobody even challenges it. It just becomes this practice because people go, hey, China owns that land. China owns this. China owns that. What they just did was they did something that was prejudiced, created a prejudice against the United States. They can't do that. They can't do that to basically prejudice a state or any claims that a state has. Do you understand that? Because that's exactly what it says. Prejudice any claims of the United States or any particular state. They're obligated to protect and secure this land and nation for its U.S. citizens and only its U.S. citizens that are here. Do you understand? I mean, it wasn't by happen chance that the Lord inspired this Constitution. Only He knew what was going to happen. I mean, most people back in the framers' time and even beyond, into the new century, like even Wilson would never have had this pipe dream of being able to say, yeah, we're going to be able to sell the United States to the communist nations, and that's how we'll be transformed into communism. No, they don't have the ability. They do not have the authority. And actually, right here, they're being told that they can't do it. Do you understand that? They're being told that they can't prejudice any claims of the United States and or of the states. Folks, let's move on. I think I'm making my point here. So where in the Constitution have the states delegated to the general government power formally within this Constitution to reduce any sovereignty in any way of a new state coming into the Union? Say, oh, yeah, you can be a state, but you can't have all your land. We're going to take all your resources and your trees and your gold and your minerals, and we're going to keep you from being able to make money, but we're going to take care of you. We're going to give you what you need. Sound like Clinton, don't I? Anyway, the fact of the matter is, folks, we've been bamboozled, they've been lying to us, and they've been abusing us, and they've been despotic in everything that they've been doing. And regardless, right, wrong, or indifferent, or even if it was based on noble intent in the origins, it is for nefarious purposes today, period. So where is there authority here to reduce in this Constitution, authority or authorization in this Constitution for the federal government into selling any land, you know, or any type of, you know, foreign, resource, not just land, any resource to any foreign entity? They can't do it. So this is the beauty here, friends. We can actually allow foreign entities to become a part of the Union, but they cannot just start giving away. Now, there is reason, there is a possibility that if the United States had some territory that, like we had, the Alaska Territory, we wanted to get that territory, and we conceded some land here and some land there, and Russia got this, the old Russia Czar, and we got the remainder of Alaska. Or we did deals with Mexico. You know, they got Baja California, and we took the rest. I think we should have taken and kept Baja California, but we didn't. Because look at that. It's just all prime coastal property. I mean, could you imagine where all the millionaires would be living in America? There's probably a lot of millionaires living there now. But anyway, let's move on. So the point, I think, is clear. There is no authority for the federal government to be able to basically dispose of any land. And we've already kind of covered the enabling acts, or I should say, the states coming in. But let me give you what the federal government has the authority to possess property-wise. Article 1, Section 8, Subsection 16 basically states that the general government's enumerated land, in other words, the list of things that it can possess that is property, is as follows. And so it goes, and this is in subsection 16, the Congress shall have the power to exercise exclusive legislation in all cases whatsoever over such district as may, by cession of particular states and the acceptance of Congress, become the seat of government of the United States, and to exercise all authority over all places purchased by the consent of the state legislatures in which the same shall be for, so in other words, they can purchase things, they can purchase land and they can purchase property, but shall be the same for, in other words, these are the things that they can purchase. They can't just purchase things for mom. They can't just purchase things for, you know, a vacation for federal employees, you know, like a golf course. Sorry. This is what they can do. And so this is what they can purchase state land for the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, now dockyards for the Navy ships and so forth, and or ports, like it says, it doesn't say ports, it says forts, but we do have the need for the importation and the exportation, so they would have needful buildings within port facilities and so forth, so that they could inspect those goods. They would have needful buildings. So this is what it says. Again, I'll read it. For the erection of forts, magazines, arsenals, dockyards, and other needful buildings. That's it. And then also in Article 4, we also talked about this thing called the territory. You know, that they have the ability to possess territory and regulate it, but that's it. That's it. That territory, all territories are to be destined to become states. They were not allowed to possess territories indefinitely to transform the United States into the United Territories. Does that make sense? States are the sovereigns, and states can easily step up and say, no, 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 no. You can't be possessing our resources. Those are for us. They don't have access to, you know, to control mining. Where in the federal government, in the Constitution, do they have the authority to dictate mining and mining practices or what to do with minerals at all? It's not there. This is why Thomas Jefferson felt it necessary to actually amend the Constitution to grant those types of powers to the federal government. And guess what? That amendment was never brought forward, that amendment was never ratified, and the federal government has never obtained constitutionally the power over mineral rights, over the ability to possess land that it wants, or the ability to grant land to independent sovereign nations like Indians and actually let them exist within the United States or within a sovereign state. They couldn't do it. This is why all of these problems that we're dealing with Indian territories and so forth, are all unconstitutional. Folks, I'm G.R. Mobley. We're Reclaiming the Republic, and we need your help. We'll be back with petitions regarding all this.
Folks, as you know, online fraud is on the rise, and it's more important than ever for your new and existing customers to be able to determine whether they are using a website with a secured connection. If you didn't know, Google mandated in 2017 that all data submitted to its linked websites must be secure with SSL certificates. Without SSL certificates, your site is listed by Google as not secure. In other words, without these certificates, your site will be harder to find, and this will impact new traffic and ultimately your revenue. Whether you're a blogger or in e-commerce, AdLocal will help protect your website from all forms of data breaches, phishing scams, and build a secure environment for your businesses, big or small. Contact AdLocal by calling 866-88-ADLOCAL or visit them on the web at www.adlocal.com for custom pricing.